Yes, I'm a transplant coordinator, and that means that I surgically remove eye tissue from the recently deceased, usually in the middle of the night, for the purposes of transplant research and education. So we're all on the same page, right? Okay. All right. I'm going to talk about one particular case. I must tell you, I've done this for 18 years in two different states. I've done procedures in over 90 different hospitals and medical examiners and funeral homes. And I have done, in a very conservative estimate, between 1,000 and 1,100 cases. And let's just say 1,000 cases. 999 are over here. One is over here. And that's the one I'm going to talk to you tonight about. And what makes it different is not the circumstances of this death, nor the age of the donor. Unfortunately, they're too common to be set up as something special, and that's a shame. What I'm going to talk about is the experience that I had. All right? So one night I got a call. I had a consented donor. This donor was a medical examiner case, and I raced to the hospital to go do this case as soon as I had gotten the paperwork faxed to me. The circumstances of his death are thus. He's a teenager. He's in high school. He's somewhere, 15 to 17 years old. After school, he was skateboarding with his friends. He took a tumble. He whacked his head on the curb. He shook it off like they all do. Got up and did some more. Come dusk, he went home. He had dinner with his family. He pointed out the big old lump on his head, and it wasn't the first one that he'd ever come home with. And he said he was feeling fine, spent the evening with his family, and then he went to bed a little early because he was feeling tired. What they didn't know is when he whacked his head, a blood vessel broke and started a slow bleed in his brain. Also, because he bounced when he hit his head, his brain actually hit the inside of his skull, and it started to bruise, and it started to swell. Well, there's no place for that to go. So it compresses and compresses and compresses, and eventually it gets to the area of the brain that handles your breathing and your heart. And so he went into a coma, and very soon thereafter, he stopped breathing, and then within a couple of minutes, his heart stopped and he died. So I get to the hospital, I get security to take me to the morgue. I hang out in morgues in the middle of the night. I am a connoisseur of morgues. This is a particularly nice one. It has a lot of stainless steel and white tile and white walls. And if you turn on all the lights, you get a suntan. It's really nice. The security guards come in, they unlock the door, they go and they unlock the cooler, they get the heck out of Dodge, and I'm there by myself. I have done this many, many times. I put on my protective gear, the hat, the mask, the gown, the booties, and my gloves. I go into the cooler, a big metal room, very cold, racks, steel trays, bodies in white shrouds, and they have shroud tags so that you can find the person you're looking for. I move the forklift over. Yes, there is a forklift, but it's not a big honking forklift, There's no diesel. It's just the forks going up and down hydraulically. You've got to push the machine back and forth, but it allows you to roll that steel tray they're on, onto the forks, and then onto a morgue cart, which I did. I moved him out into the autopsy room and closed the cooler. I opened the shroud, and like every middle-aged woman in the whole world, I leaned over and pushed his hair out of his face. You have to do it. I did a very quick physical assessment. There was very little wrong with him aside from what happened in his accident. And so I went over to start setting up my surgical. I have a little traveling surgical kit. I schlep it everywhere I go. And so I'm setting these up, opening up my kits, getting ready. You know when you walk in a room and even though you can't really see what's going on in there, you can tell if you're alone or you're not. And if you're in a room and you're alone and somebody walks in, and even though you haven't heard anything and you haven't seen anything, you know that there's somebody there. Well, I realized I was not alone in that morgue. And so it was a very strong feeling. So I walked over to the doors thinking that maybe security had come in and left because they saw I had the shroud open. I looked out into the corridors. No one, either side, nobody down there, nobody waiting. I even opened up the cooler to see if there was somebody moving around in there. There was not. So I came back in and I stood and I thought, well, maybe I'm having a stroke. I don't know. Either that or there's a UFO that's got an electromagnetic beam that's coming down and affecting my brain. And as Sherlock Holmes and many others have said, when you have eliminated all of the possible avenues to explore, then you have to look at the impossible. And so I looked over and I thought, well, I mean, what's the worst could happen? I make a fool of myself in front of myself, you know? Oh, well. So I walked over to my donor, and yes, they are all my donors when I'm there. And I looked down and I said, maybe nobody thought to tell you, but you remember you were skateboarding yesterday and you hit your head and you got up and kept on going and you went home, you had dinner, you were with your family, and then you went to sleep. Well, you had a vessel that had broken in your brain and it was bleeding and it was causing pressure. And you actually bruised your brain. I mean, you whacked your brain so hard that you bruised it, and it was expanding. And it eventually shut off your breathing, and it shut off your heart, and you died. And I'm from the transplant group. And when we got in touch with your family, they were devastated about their loss of you. But you know what they told us? They told us you were a good guy. They told us that helping people was your thing and that they knew that this would be what you wanted for them to do. So they set aside their grief and they filled out the paperwork so that you could become a donor and you could help someone see again. And what I wanted to tell you was that it's okay. You can go. You don't have to hang around here. And I ran out of things to say. So it was time for me to do my scrub, betadine scrub. I went over to the deep sink. I'm over there, and those of you who have ever had to scrub or watched the doctor shows, you actually start focusing on how many times you're scrubbing each of your digits, each side. So you start to focus on that, and I did. I started to focus on that, and then suddenly, about 2 minutes into it, I was alone. I was all alone. So I finished the case and went on with my life. But I know that in my dotage, which by the way I think is going to start next week, in my dotage, whether it's me sitting out on my deck in the sun, talking to to friends and family, or if it's me in a nursing home, tied to a wheelchair, talking to my imaginary friends, I know in the core of my being that this is the story that I will be telling.